Welcome to the Voices of Grambling, a digital oral history podcast, a series exploring the rich, nuanced history of Grambling State University, the city of Grambling, and the people who make it. This series is a collaborative project between students and faculty of the History Department of Grambling State University, as well as faculty from the University of Arkansas. The Voices of Grambling, a digital oral history project, has been made possible in part
by a grant from the Albert LePage Center for History and the Public Interest at Villanova University. This season is part of their Cities and Historical Perspective thematic investigation and will focus on the economic, racial, and social history of the city of Grambling through conversations with former business owners and city officials.
Any views, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed in this podcast do not necessarily represent those of
the LePage Center for History and the Public Interest, the National Endowment for the Humanities, the Social Science Research Council, the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities.
My name is Dr. Edward Holtz. I am here today with Ms. Valina Lane for the Voices of Grambling Project. Ms. Lane, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome.
First, I'd like to give you an opportunity to talk a little bit about yourself.
My name is Valina Purvis Lane, and I am a native of Mansfield, Louisiana. And, of course, I now reside in Grambling. I have been here 50 or more years in Grambling. I was born on Valentine's Day, Sweetheart Day. And, of course, my husband always told me, he said, "You are a sweetheart, but you never do any housework." I am currently working for Community Coordinating Council Incorporated, which is a nonprofit organization. Before I went there, I finished high school at DeSoto Parish Training School in Mansfield, Louisiana. And from there, I received a band scholarship to participate in the Grambling State University band for 4 years, which afforded me an education playing the clarinet, and in those 4 years were very fruitful because at that time I had two other siblings at Grambling, and so my mother said that the scholarship really did help. From Grambling, I received a degree in elementary education. I went on to teach math and music in Doyleene, Louisiana, which is in Webster Parish. Stayed there for 10 years and moved to Lincoln Parish and became an itinerant music teacher, where I would visit a school per day, 5 schools in the course of a week, elementary, junior high, and high school. And after 20 years of teaching, I was 41 years old, and I told my husband, I said, "It's time to move on." So I retired at 41. My mother always asked me to stay for the 20 years so you would be able to receive a check. But in Louisiana, you receive a check for life if you work at least 20 years. I said, "But I'm going to do it just for you." And after 20 years, I moved on to 15 days after I retired from Lincoln Parish School System. I was asked to serve as the secretary for the Grambling Housing Authority. Didn't even know anything about governmental units at all. And I stayed there for 20 years after being the secretary for 3 years. The executive director that hired me passed away. And of course they had never had a female director. So when they posted the job announcement, I decided I would apply for that job as executive director after I had been there as secretary for that length of time. 11 men applied and one lady, Valina Lane. And I got the position. So for 20 years, for the other 17 years, I was the executive director for the Grambling Housing Authority.
That's a great overview. And so now maybe let's go back and talk a little bit about some of those things that you mentioned. First, let's talk a little bit about your childhood. What was it like growing up in Mansfield, Louisiana?
My childhood was wonderful. My parents owned the funeral home in Mansfield, and there were 8 children. 3 older siblings were much older. There was a gap between 3 and the last 5, and I was in the last 5. And the last 5 was 1 year apart. So therefore, we were very, very close. The other 3 were much older than we were. Growing up in Mansfield, we attended an all-black school. And by living in the city, we had to catch a bus. We didn't catch a school bus. We had to catch the city bus. And we paid a nickel. In fact, they called the bus Nickel Willie. Mother had to pay 25 cents every day for the 5 of us to go to ride the bus to school. For the most part, everybody in the community that I was reared in came to our house, because at that time we were the only place in the community that had a telephone. So we took all the messages for everybody, and Mother would send us different places to go and get Miss So-and-so to answer the phone, go and get. That's what we were. By her having, being my father died when I was 6. So my mother actually was the phenomenal woman who took over the funeral business. And during those years, from age 6, which one highlight of age 6 for me was my grandmother was a teacher, and she happened to teach me and my oldest brother, which was 1 year older than I was, first grade. And I always say that that's how I got the foundation that I have. But whatever I want to do, I contributed to my grandmother, who really laid the foundation in first grade.
Tell me some more about this funeral business.
The funeral business was a very exciting business, and I also say that's the reason why I'm so compassionate now, because we were small, and all we ever saw were families who were saved, more or less. So this, and Mother always talked to us about dying, and all of the managerial deals that goes with the funeral home and all, and we helped a lot. We all had chores. That's another thing, in the funeral home and the house too. The funeral business was so that my mother hired 2 more men to help her with the funeral business, and it was set aside that we were in the big house, which was our house, and the next door was the funeral home. But to see people going and coming in the funeral home business really, I think, helped me to relate to how compassionate you can always be, because this is what you looked at all the time, you know, because every weekend, there's most women there at funerals. That's what we were.
Did some of your chores involve any activities with the funerals themselves?
Yes, yes. When I got in high school, I had an art. She never would let us really do anything but the sweeping and the things until we got in high school. When we got in high school, my brother, 2 brothers, there were 2 brothers and 3 girls, though above the 5. When I got in high school, I can vividly remember that one time she couldn't find the 2 men that she, and they weren't full time, they were when she needed them, really. And She said to me, "Valina, you're going to have to help go and pick up a body." I said, "Oh, this would be good. I'm glad, you know, because I've been around it all the time, but I had never gone to actually pick up a body." And that was an exciting time for me. My brothers helped her when they got to high school. They always helped her. But just to pick up a body, and we always would be there when it's time, because she dressed all the bodies herself. She did not embalm. She had an embalmer. But she dressed all the bodies herself, and so we were involved, especially sometimes when she needed somebody to help lift or whatever the situation that was required for her to get the bodies ready for presentation.
So after graduating from high school, you made your way up to Grambling. So why did you consider Grambling?
I really didn't consider it. My parents, my mother, father died when I was six. My mother said, "Now you know, you and Wilbur, that's my oldest brother, he had heart trouble when he was six. So that's the reason why he and I entered first grade at the same time. I was six and he was seven. So we stayed together from first grade, where my grandmother taught us, to 12th grade. We were together, just like peas in a pod." She said to me, "Valina, I'm going to send your brother to Dearborn Junior College in Michigan. Can't send both of you. This is where you're going to have to part from Wilbur. I'm going to send you to Grambling College," at that time we called it Grambling College, "because your uncle, that's my daddy's brother, Edward Purvis, was a teacher here at Grambling State University, at Grambling. I'm going to send you there so they can oversee you there." And she said, "You must remember there are two more. They're twins that's coming after you all, so I got to try to prepare for them. They will not finish until 2 years later." So that she was the one who decided that I would go to Grambling. And then she was the one who decided that I should go into elementary education, even though I had the music, the band scholarship. Mm-hmm. She was the one who decided. Yeah.
And can you remind us what years you were at Grambling?
1953 to 1957. I graduated in 1957.
And so in those mid-50s, what was the band like in the 50s?
Oh, the band was in the 50s. See, at one time, the band didn't have girls in it. That was after I was in it, though. But when I came, there were girls in the band. The band was, Conrad Hutchison was the band director in the 50s. And Wiley, because he was the clarinet teacher, William Wiley was his name. But the band was not dancing and all like they do now. We were more of a marching type band rather than all of the things that they do now on the field. But we did get up early in the morning. Every morning we did have to get up early and be on the field for practice. I'm sure just as they have to do now. And of course I was in concert band too, so when marching time was, the football season was over, then I also continued in the concert band. And I really enjoyed it because I really did like a lot of classical music. Even when I was growing up, I really like to listen to a lot of classical music, and so the concert band played more of the kind of music that I really like. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And what was Conrad Hutchison like, the head of the band program?
Conrad Hutchison was a wonderful person. He really was. He was hard on you. He made you really get down to, because he wanted to produce. You know, he was trying to achieve a goal also. So, but he was a very, very good band director, certainly was.
The band's known as world famed. Did you all travel anywhere?
Yes, I didn't travel like Japan like they've traveled, but we traveled with the team to like Houston, Jackson, Mississippi, Arkansas when the band would go, when the football games would be there. We traveled close by.
Mm-hmm. Now, what was it like to travel with the band?
But see, the band was all black. Mm-hmm. So therefore, we didn't, there was no trouble. The big, I guess the largest issue is the girls had to sit in the front and the boys mm-hmm. had to sit in the back, you know, when we traveled. But there were no racial issues because everybody in the band was black. Mm-hmm.
And so you mentioned the band became all male. Were you there when the band
no,
became all male? That was after,
that was
so
after,
it would have been after 57?
That's right. It was after 57.
Okay.
Yeah, it was after 57.
In addition to the band, what were some of the other events that you went to?
I would say there, you know, they had lyceum programs. I guess they still have the lyceum programs, but that's Marian Anderson got a chance to come to Grambling while I was here. And that was kind of like a highlight. On Sundays at Grambling then, you had to dress up. They called it Vespers. And every Sunday evening at 6 o'clock, we all had to be dressed up, going to the, where the Eddie Robinson Museum is mm-hmm. now. That's where the auditorium, that was the auditorium. So that's where we went for all the lyceum programs and all the Vesper services. And they would have renowned ministers, a renowned speaker, or some representative or to come in and speak at that time, motivational more or less. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Some of the other motivational moments were convocations with Prez Jones. What were those convocations like?
Prez Jones was a comical, you know, sort of comical. And you were always at ease because he was down to earth. You know, they have that slogan, the universe where everybody is somebody. Yes, you could really feel it because it came from the top with Prez being a person who really related to the students. He was not far-fetched. He was always there, always there. So with prayers, you know, you just felt so much at home. And that's exactly what I liked about Grambling. You felt like you were just at home.
Uh-huh. And while you were here, you stayed in the dorms?
Dorms, yes.
Okay.
I stayed in the dorms.
So you presumably had a dorm mother?
Yes.
Can you tell us anything about your dorm mom?
Uh-huh. My dorm mother was I had one named Miss Virginia Harris. Miss Virginia Harris. Hunter, I think it was her last name, Miss Virginia Harris. In fact, her daughter lives here now. You probably heard of Nelda Basie. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. Her daughter lives here now. But she was a very stern dorm mother. And of course, there was another one, Mamie Jacobs Connolly, who also, and she was from Mansfield. My mother knew her very much when I told her Mamie was my dorm mother. So, but, you know, girls could not leave the dormitory at that time at all. And but dorm mothers stayed in the dorm for the most part. They had a room in the dorm. You had to sign out, sign back in. Or someone, like if my uncle lived here, if he came to get me, he had to sign me out and bring me back and sign me back in at that time. So it was very, very strict. They disciplined you and you were, it was just like a second mother, really and truly. Mm-hmm. That's what it was like.
Talked a little bit about the band, about some of the events. But what about the classes? What were classes like?
Oh, the classes were really nice. I tell you one, my uncle taught real life problems. I don't even know if they have that course here now, but anyway, that's what he taught. And he was the foundation development director after he moved out of teaching. And when I came to Grant, everybody had to take real life problems. Regardless of what you were majoring in, that was one subject everybody had to take. When I got my classes, his name was the teacher for the class that I was supposed to teach. But just mind you, I had my grandmother for my first grade teacher. I had my older sister for my biology teacher in high school. When I got here, here comes another relative, and I said, no more. I don't know much about add and drop. Ed, that was my uncle's name. I'm going to have to drop you. I said, it's too many relatives, you know. My sister relative, she didn't press like my grandmother did for us to really learn. But I said, if my uncle's going to be like my sister, I don't want to be in the class. I want to be on my own so I can be independent and really learn, you know, because sometimes relatives would just let you go pass on by, and that's not good for you at all.
Presumably, you had to take it with a different instructor. Do you remember some of the problems that you learned about or talked about in real life problems?
In real life problems, we really, I took it with a different instructor whose name was Marcus Earls. It was Marcus Earls or either W.E. Downs, one of the two. In real life problems, we related more or less to areas where you talked about areas where you came from, because all of us were from the rural areas for the most part, you know. I say rural areas. If you lived in the city, which I say I lived in the city, but it was still a rural area, you know, more or less. I talked about transportation, or we might have talked about governmental affairs, but nothing, that we couldn't relate to, that we had not been a part of.
You talked about the drop ad. How did you register for classes? What happened each semester for registration?
For registration, the classes were already on the card. When we got there, we pick up our cards from our advisor. Must have had an advisor. Pick up our cards, and the classes were already there. Because the classes were so put that first semester classes, second semester classes, first year. First semester classes, second semester classes, second year. Those were the classes you knew you were going to take. They were already listed. You really didn't have such a selection. You might have wanted to drop or add another class, but you didn't have the classes were there that you were supposed to take according to that year you were here.
Anything else that you remember about your time at Grambling during those 4 years?
The dorm life was all 4 years. No, the first 2 years, there were six of us in the room, six beds, there were six. The last 2 years, four. And there were six, and by the way, all of my dorm mates have passed but me. But anyway, the only thing I would say that I learned a lot from mingling with other, sleeping and eating and mingling with six other girls, or five other girls, I really did. So it was a good, but never a problem. I learned a lot because some of them had attitudes and some of them did different things than what I would normally do. So I had to be disciplined enough to say no. I did have roommates who were sort of rowdy sometimes, but I stood on the right side.
So when you graduated, you went and taught outside of the area, but you did come back eventually to the Lincoln Parish area. So what brought you back to Lincoln Parish?
Yeah, when I graduated from college, I did student teaching in Darlene. When I did student teaching in Darlene, the principal asked me if I would come back to that school the next year. So I didn't even have to apply when I graduated. He asked me if I would come back. In fact, he told me this. He said, Mrs. Purvis, I was Purvis then, if you come back, when you all leave graduation that Sunday, You can come on by Minden. Minden is where he lived. Darlene is out from Minden. And you can spend the night with us, and your mother can, if your mother will allow. And I'll carry you to the school board, and you will be hired that Monday. Graduation was on a Sunday. So when I got married, my husband was here in school also. So therefore, I said, well, now, it's no point in traveling from Darlene to Grambling area. And one of the supervisors in Lincoln Parish asked me if I would like to become an itinerant music teacher. They needed a music teacher. Even though I had not majored in music, I didn't major in music. She said, we really needed a music teacher for all the schools in Lincoln Parish. Will you consider moving? And that's when I said yes, because transportation is a problem, trying to drive from Grambling to Darlene. And that would help out a whole lot.
Absolutely. And what year did you come back to be an itinerant music teacher?
That was in 67. So I stayed in Darlene 10 years.
Mm-hmm. What was it like to teach in Lincoln Parish during the late 60s?
When I first became an itinerant music teacher, I was only going to black schools, all black schools. And then integration came into play, and I was sent to Hillcrest, Glendale, I.A. Lewis. I.A. Lewis was principally black. No, it was, yeah, at that time, that's right, all black. But Glendale and Hillcrest were principally white schools. And so, but I didn't have a problem. I was the choir director, and I had program. I saw a girl about 2 weeks ago, a white girl, in Walmart. She stopped me. She said, "Miss Lane, do you know what I remember about your class?" She said, "You always talked about Bach and Beethoven. Sometimes we would be sitting there listening, and we didn't know what was going on." Say, but now I love to listen, and I was glad to say, I love to listen to Bach and Beethoven. And she said, "You know what else you did? You carried us to the Ice Capades." I like, just like I like traveling now and carrying people to do that, I really did try to instill within the children the other side of music, you know, because they were the hip-hop and the rhythm and blues and whatever. But with the other side of music and what the classicals portray, you know. And I didn't know that they were, it made a difference with them until, you know, in fact, I'm with a girl in Bible class at Temple. I go to a Bible class in Temple, and she always tell me, Faith, Miss Lane, you were always talking about the classicals, you know. Say, I never knew anything about Rachmaninoff and all of that until you say, but you got it over to us. I said, yes. And she said, I said, but now, and she's what, a grandmother now? And remembers it.
So you did mention that you taught during that period of integration, desegregation. What do you recall about that process?
In the Darlene area, it was all black schools, so there were no whites there. But when I got to Ruston, 2 years, say here 2 years, and then I was asked to do the two white schools. You know, I guess with not being an outgoing person and not, I really didn't have any problems whatsoever, you know. When I went to Tech, that's where I got my master's from Tech. You know, I would hear undertone, negative tones, and I think I was in the first, seven blacks to go there. At the elementary, at the schools, Glendale and Hillcrest, the teachers were more or less, I would say, if it were anybody, not the kids, didn't have any trouble with kids, but some of the teachers were not used to having a black around, and because they were all white teachers at the school for the most part. and they would maybe be a little, you know, not say anything, but attitude-wise, that's all I'm saying. But I think I was so inviting and cordial until that soon just went away. It really did. Soon went away, and we were all just like one big happy family.
You said you got a master's at Tech. Can you tell me a little bit about your master's when you were at Tech? You said you were some of the first black students.
That's right. I was the first black student. When I first went to Tech, I had gone to San Francisco State the first summer to work on my master's. When I went to San Francisco State, I think there were a few blacks at Tech then. But I was a little skeptical about it, so I said, well, no, I'm going to San Francisco State. They have accepted me, so I'm going to go. The first time I'm going to San Francisco State, which I did, I didn't have any problems at San Francisco State. The next summer, I decided, I said, well, I'm right here at Grambling. Why not just go on to Tech and do the other two summers? Then you don't need but three summers to be through. Actually, as I say, I am so outgoing and so friendly with everybody. And all of this is from childhood because we had to relate to so many people there at the funeral home. You know, we had to relate to people, you know, in a most compassionate way. So therefore, when I went there, my professors were just wonderful. You know, in fact, one professor told me in math, Summerall, I'll never forget the lady. She said, you are at every conference hour, you know, when it's time for them to do one-on-one with the student, and they would post conference hours for them to help you. She said, and you don't miss, whether you know it or whether you don't know it. I said, miss, I'm here for a purpose. And I have to get to work. And I knew that you're the person who can help me. Mm-hmm. You know, and so she just, at first she was kind of standing off, you know, but after I started going every day, what I'm trying to say is I always took the initiative to make sure that I'm going to be with you regardless of whether you want me to be with you or not. Mm-hmm. And that's where I am about people anyway, you know.
Do you feel your experience was similar to, I guess, the undergrads that would have been at Tech?
There were no... I'm trying to see if there were many undergrads. All the people at Tech were graduate students, black. Mm-hmm. I mean, those first years. I know. I didn't speak to any undergrad. And plus, if there were, they weren't there for the summer much. Mm-hmm. I was only there summers for Tech.
So after you do your 20 years of service in teaching, you move over to the Housing Authority. You spoke a little bit about it, but can you elaborate a little bit more about some of the responsibilities?
When I first went to the Housing Authority as a secretary, there were a lot of black books on a shelf that would tell you all about government procedures and policies and all. I would read those books because I wanted to expand the Housing Authority. It's just those 18 units across from New Rocky Valley Baptist Church. You know where that is? That's where I was, right there. And that's all they had were 18 units at that time. So I said to the director, I said, look like we could have people coming in to apply all the time. And, that's one reason why I wear corsage right now, is because they always come in with a sad story. But when I started wearing the corsage, people focus on, you know, they focus more or less on the corsage. They always say, oh, you're such a beautiful corsage, you know. I said, well, I hope you've forgotten that problem that you came. But at any rate, I read these books, started reading these books. So I started writing grants. I had to learn how to write grants to try to secure more housing because we had to turn down. Being a compassionate person I am, you know, I just hate for them to leave and knowing we did not have any vacancies. I said, Grambling needs more housing. So then I wrote the first grant for B.T. Woodard, the 50 units over there. I wrote the first grant for that one. And while I was writing that, while I was we were in construction, I said, if it's one going to be on this side, you need to have one on the, that's the reason why I had one at Best College. You know, the one past, on this street, huh? Best College? Yeah, this street, isn't it? Well, past the home economics building, past the radio station, that road going past the, that, there is a 30 unit. So I wrote the 30 unit, I got the 50 unit going, started writing on the 30 unit so that we could have more hot one on this side. So now, as a result, they have 98, 18, 50, and 30. They have 98 units of public housing in Grambling. And then after that, from the books, I learned that you could also apply for, I love the writing grants I did. You could also apply for Section 8 housing, where people could select houses outside in the community, and we could still assist them with that rent. They call it the Section 8 program or the voucher program. So therefore, I did, we had 178 and all, I believe it was. So I did whatever the difference between that, about 80 more units of Section 8 housing, where people would come in, apply, and they would find their own houses in Grambling, and we would pay the owners the rent for those particular people, you know, based on their income. We would pay the rent. But and I love planning programs for them. I also wrote a grant for a 15-passenger van, and I got a 15-passenger van. I found out that the children didn't go to church in the housing complex. So therefore, I wrote a grant and got this 15-passenger van, and I wrote a grant for me a car. I got a car, too. And the children, every Sunday morning, I would go through the housing complex, pick up those who would go, pick up children to carry them to Sunday school and church. Uh-huh. I love that. I'm just an outgoing person. That's all I love about
it. And you mentioned your impact on some of the children, but another population that we have here in Grambling are the students at Grambling State University. Did you work with them?
Yes, I should. In fact, the mayor of Grambling was on the Section 8 program. That's right. I was telling them the other day, Bradley and his wife, I said, you all are products of the housing authority. We had a little retirement program for one of the people who retired, and they came. In fact, he presented a plaque. And he said then, if it had not been for the programs that like the housing authority had, I wouldn't have been able to finish college myself. And both of us came back to Grambling, and neither one of us had a degree at the time. And the housing authority helped us to pay our rent at Eddie Robinson, the state of Dewey, that's where they stayed. Exactly. So, and not only them, several other people who are now doing very well. They are. And as a result of the housing authority providing the kind of housing assistance that they provided.
What were your interactions like with other housing authorities in the state?
Oh, very, very good. And that's another thing I liked about the housing. It was funded through the Department of Housing and Urban Development. So it's a government program. And they would send you, you could travel to every kind of meeting, you could get all kind of training you wanted to get. You really weren't left alone. And as a result, I've been to every state, not necessarily on housing, but I've been to every state in the United States but three states. But it was all because every time I picked up one of their bulletins and I saw that there was a training in a certain place, I would attend every training, you know, that they had. So there was no reason not to be well-versed in housing at all, because they really did provide the training that you needed.
Are there any other things that you did as executive director that you want to speak about?
Yes, I carried the chair. I always reached out to the children because I wanted them to always know that this is just a stepping stone. Where you are now is only a stepping stone. You don't want to stay here all of your life. The parents and all. I always would carry them on trips. I carried them to Disney World in Florida. In fact, I wrote a letter to the Grambling citizens, everybody in Grambling, asked them for $3. I never forget this, Dr. Hope. $3 each person, just give, if you give me $3, and I told the residents, I said, now you're going to have to work hard, and we're going to have fundraisers every Saturday, we're going to sell hot dogs and help yourself. You got to help yourself, and then I'm going to ask the citizens to help you also. So, and then all to bring this to fruition. And we wrote a letter. I think I got $3. Everything else was over and above, exceedingly and over and above that they sent. And we got a chance to carry a busload of children and parents to Disney World in Florida. Just wonderful. And Six Flags, I carried them to Houston Six Flags. I don't think they have it anymore. Dallas Six Flags. I carried them to Baton Rouge, to the Capitol. Anytime I could find monies to take them and get them out of, to let them see, because if you stay there all the time, you won't know anything else but that. But I always wanted to bring them out of that environment. Not that it was a terrible environment, because we always made sure that it was safe, sanitary, and decent.
So outside of the housing authority, how else have you been involved in the life of the city?
Well, right now, I work with Community Coordinating Council Incorporated. It's called CCC. Pinky Wilkerson, and I don't know if somebody probably told you about Pinky Wilkerson, was a state representative, and she organized this organization. And that's what I took on when I retired from the Housing Authority. I retired from the Housing Authority in September 30, 1997. I think I was in Las Vegas at the time. Pinky called me and said, Belina, I know you have retired. And I was 61 then. I always dealt with those more. 41 retired, then 61, and I've dealt in 20s. And she said, I know you retired. Maybe this might be your last retirement. But she said, we really need a director for the nonprofit organization that I organized. Say the man who we just organized it in July, I think it was July. And he is going to leave in January. And I'm just wondering if you will consent to come in, becoming the executive director of the nonprofit Community Coordinating Council. I say, I sure will. I said, and didn't know nothing about nonprofits. Not that was not government. That the Housing Authority is nonprofit, but it's government funded. This was more or less like a private movie.
Mm-hmm. What else can you tell me about your relationship with Pinky?
Pinky was, I call her just like I call my mom, the phenomenal woman who could get things done any time of night, because that's when she would call you all the time, any time of night. But she was just like a lady on a mission trying to accomplish and change the total quality of life of people. And that's what it was all about, really. I didn't get a chance to work with her but 3 years before she passed away, before she was killed. But she taught me a lot about, well, not necessarily working with people. I knew a lot about working with people, but just about trying to attract dollars on fundraising. Fundraising, attracting dollars for a nonprofit, because that's what you have to do for a nonprofit. You got to be able to attract the dollars. But she got a lot of programs for us through her, because she was the state representative. The agency was funded with a lot of funds from the Department of Urban Affairs from the state. Mm-hmm. But she was, to me, she was wonderful, really, too. Still had me working now.
Well, Miss Lane, thank you so much for taking this time to speak with us today.
You're welcome.
You've been listening to the Voices of Grambling, a digital oral history podcast, a production of the students and faculty of the Grambling State University History Department, along with faculty at the University of Arkansas. Be sure to listen in to one of our other episodes, and if you have a voice you would like to share or have a nomination for a voice that needs to be heard, please contact the History Department of Grambling State University for more information.